Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, May 18th, 2023. Marfa ISD Board of Trustees appoints new member by Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. The Marfa Independent School District Board of Trustees appointed Marfa resident Stella Fuentes to the board on Monday. Fuentes will serve as Place 1, a seat that has remained vacant since the resignation of Krista Marquez last July, and which the board previously struggled to fill due to a lack of applicants. With the filling of the final vacant seat, Fuentes rounds out the board of 7, joining existing members President Teresa Nunez, Vice President Yolanda Jurado, Secretary Renee Gonzalez, Lori Flores, Ernie Villarreal, and Ruben Martinez. After putting out a call for letters of interest from potential school board members, Fuentes was the chosen candidate at Monday night's board meeting and was sworn in alongside existing board member Lori Flores, who ran unopposed to keep her Place 2 seat. Fuentes is originally from San Benito, a town in South Texas near the Rio Grande Valley. She earned degrees from the University of Texas, San Antonio, and moved to the Big Bend region with her husband, Vince, who is from Presidio, in 2010. Professionally, she works in strategic communications with the Air Force Installation and Mission Support Center out of San Antonio, and has 2 children, ages 9 and 7, who currently attend Wonder School Marfa, but will continue their education in junior high and high school with Marfa ISD, said Fuentes. Fuentes has experience volunteering with MISD's parent-teacher organization, PTO, Read Marfa, has served on the Marfa Studio of Arts Board, and more. She said she hopes to continue strengthening existing community partnerships in her new role as a board member. Fuentes said she was also eager to offer new ideas and support local students, staff, and parents. My main focus as a board trustee is to ensure that our shorthorns have a strong academic focus, all while preparing them for life beyond high school, said Fuentes. I want to ensure that we prepare them with the necessary life skills and empower them with the insight needed to create goals and take all the necessary steps to reach those goals. I also want to ensure that we are doing everything possible to support the morale, health, and well-being of our students and staff, she added. Now, with no vacancies, the full school board will move forward with the 2023-2024 budgeting process, ushering in of new interim superintendent Arturo Alferez and more. Fuentes's seat, Place 1, will be up for election next May because she was appointed rather than elected. Existing board members said they were happy to welcome Fuentes to the board and were looking forward to working with her. The decision was to appoint her because she has been a big supporter of Marfa ISD through PTO and the Marfa Education Foundation and shows a great interest in our school and community, said Teresa Nunez, board president. She wants to help continue to move our school in the right direction. Staff photo by Mary Cantrell. Marfa ISD senior Charlize Martinez and her horse Yoshiki ride in the senior parade down Highland Avenue this week, celebrating the class of 2023. Texas House passes controversial bill to create a border protection unit. By Sam Karras, Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Austin, a controversial bill to create a separate border policing unit in counties along the Rio Grande, co-authored by Texas State Representative Eddie Morales, who represents the Big Bend region, passed the Texas House of Representatives last week and is now working its way through the Senate. House Bill 7 would create a border protection unit to assist law enforcement in operations along the border. Unit members, who would not have to be law enforcement officers, would be empowered to arrest, apprehend, or detain persons crossing the Texas-Mexico border unlawfully, and deter persons attempting to cross the border unlawfully. HB 7 rose from the ashes of House Bill 20, an entirely Republican-sponsored bill killed on a technicality last Wednesday night. Sponsors of HB 7 quickly copy-pasted language in order to allow key elements of the dead bill to live on. The amended version was then passed along to the Senate, which held public hearings on Thursday morning. The authors of the original HB 20 argued the creation of the Border Protection Unit was necessary given the spread of human and drug trafficking across the United States-Mexico border, as well as border communities becoming overwhelmed with an influx of migrants. Beyond threats to the health and safety of border residents, the bill suggested there was an emotional toll its authors hoped to quell by expanding law enforcement presence. Many Texans have lost the peaceful use and enjoyment of their properties due to criminal activities along the border, it reads. In both bills, the Border Protection Unit is described as a criminal justice agency that supports existing law enforcement operations in border counties and counties adjacent to border counties. Commissioned law enforcement officers from other agencies, sheriffs, state troopers, and local police can be members. Other state employees designated as peace officers can also be appointed, pulling from a huge pool of folks employed in positions as diverse as park rangers, fire marshals, and TABC investigators. The Border Protection Unit would be led by a unit chief appointed by the governor. The only explicit qualification to be tapped as unit chief is to be a U.S. citizen, and only the governor can remove the chief from office. Working closely with the governor, the chief would have hiring and firing power and help implement an as yet undetermined training program. Any officer within the unit may make arrests on suspected immigration offenses. Commissioned officers, meaning individuals with a peace officer license under the Texas Criminal Code, may make arrests in any border county, even if it's not their own. In addition to making arrests, officers may also use non-lethal crowd control measures to deter people from crossing the border. The original text of HB 20, decried by the Human Rights Watch, granted officers of the Border Protection Unit immunity from any criminal or civil liability for actions taken on behalf of the agency. The version of HB 7 that passed the House retains much of the same language as the amended HB 20, while also including provisions for a border region court program supporting strained legal institutions along the border, arguing that prosecutions have significantly increased in the wake of Operation Lone Star, the state's $4 billion-plus infusion of cash to local law enforcement. In addition to a pathway for grant funding for visiting judges and court staff, the bill also specifies that state money can be used for construction and maintenance of facilities, including courts and processing and detention centers, as well as temporary border security infrastructure, such as barriers, fences, wires, roads, trenches, and surveillance technology. Ports of entry and qualifying educational institutions could also benefit financially from the bill. HB 7 has a pro-business bent, hoping to attract companies to set up shop in border counties, as well as to support and promote tourism in the border region. All of the 55 sponsors of HB 20 were Republicans. None of the six primary sponsors represented border counties. HB 7 was authored by five state representatives from border counties, including three Democrats: Richard Raymond, District 42, Sergio Munoz Jr., District 36, and Eddie Morales, District 74. Republicans Jaime Lopez, District 37, and Ryan Guillen, District 31, also signed on. Five of the primary sponsors of HB 20 signed on to the amended version of HB 7 that was passed on to the Senate. Brian Harrison, District 10, J. M. Lozano, District 43, Teresa Leo Wilson, District 23, and Ellen Troxclair, District 19. None of the authors of HB 20 or HB 7 returned requests for comment from the Big Bend Sentinel, including Morales, the Big Bend's representative in the House. Senator Cesar Blanco, the Big Bend's representative in the Senate, said he was vehemently opposed to the creation of a border protection unit. He felt that the vagueness of the bill could still pave the way for civilians to be granted the power to enforce federal immigration law, as originally detailed in HB 20. "This bill lacks guardrails," he wrote to the Big Bend Sentinel. "With this bill lacking a humanitarian aspect, I worry that this could potentially lead to the profiling and targeting of Latinos in our communities." On a media call hosted by a panel of policy experts and immigrants' rights advocates, Fatima Menendez, Southwest Regional Counsel for the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Educational Fund, explained that the bill would directly challenge the delineation between state and federal law enforcement, as Border Protection Unit officers would be tasked with enforcing federal immigration law. Menendez pointed toward efforts by Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton to fight Arizona versus United States, a 2012 ruling that state law enforcement agencies may not usurp federal immigration officials in enforcing federal law, citing Article 6 of the U.S. Constitution. Paxton has sued the Biden administration a dozen times, hoping to challenge current immigration policy at the federal level. Paxton has repeatedly called to test the limits of the Arizona ruling in particular, and argued that the time was ripe, given the fact that the Trump administration appointed more justices to the Supreme Court than any president since Reagan. "We should test to see if the states can protect themselves, given the circumstances we're in that we've never been in before," he testified before the Texas Senate on March 16. Menendez felt that those efforts by states to supersede federal policy would target the most vulnerable land border crossers. These officers would be authorized to arrest, apprehend, detain, and remove persons that may have legitimate asylum claims before those individuals are ever able to speak with a federal immigration officer, she said. On a more symbolic level, Betty Camargo of the El Paso-based Border Network for Human Rights, which also has an office in Presidio, felt that the bill contributed to a pervasive mischaracterization and militarization of safe and secure border communities. She argued that many borderlands residents would prefer to welcome and serve migrants rather than turning them away. Camargo found parallels in early 20th century immigration policy and the waves of immigrants from Europe seeking financial and physical security. "The border has become the new Ellis Island for many individuals," she said. "We want to uphold our American values of dignity and respect rather than hate and fear." After grant loss and firing of top staff, community leaders triaged to save local nonprofit in crisis. By Allegra Hobbs, ALLEGRA at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. After failure to complete years of mandatory audits led to the loss of key grant money for the organization, Big Bend Community Action Committee's Board of Directors terminated the nonprofit's top staff, throwing the embattled nonprofit into disarray as community leaders scrambled to salvage the remaining programs. leadership of the committee, which provides economic assistance to low-income residents across five counties through state-funded grants, have not completed fiscal audits required by the federal government dating back to 2019, leading the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs, TDHCA, to defund the utility assistance program provided through the group. 2 weeks ago, after the defunding, Executive Director Aiden Estrada and Financial Officer Bernie Zelazny were fired. Last week, remaining staffers and board members gathered at the committee's Marfa office for a series of meetings on the organization's future. At the first meeting, on Thursday, some decisions were made swiftly, with Brewster County Judge Greg Hennington initiating motions. Presidio County Judge Joe Portillo was appointed chairman of the board, while Big Bend Regional Hospital District Director J.D. Newsom was appointed interim CEO. "As long as we can have him," said Hennington. Newsom was present to offer his nonprofit expertise as the committee struggled to get back on its feet and ended up agreeing to the temporary appointment. It was unclear how long he would be able to fulfill it, given the demands of heading up the hospital district. On Thursday, he gave his assessment of the organization's current situation. "The organization is in crisis right now," said Newsom. "The upper leadership is not here anymore, so there's going to be a lot of pieces to pick up. It's also a great opportunity to fix a lot of issues the organization has and come out stronger, but it's going to take a lot of time and effort." The challenges facing the organization were many and overlapping. Most pressing was the matter of the Lost Utility Assistance Program. Marfa resident and softball coach P.J. Serrano charged with possession of child pornography by Allegra Hobbs, Allegra at BigBenSentinel.com. Marfa. Marfa local Patricio Javier P.J. Serrano, 35, was arrested and charged last week with possession of child pornography. He remains in custody as he awaits a preliminary detention hearing. News of Serrano's arrest sent shockwaves through the Big Bend Amateur Softball Association, BBASU, where he coached a softball team for girls 10 and up. A representative for the association took to social media last week to assure community members that Serrano has been suspended and no allegations have emerged against him within the team. "This news has shocked all of us," wrote Letty Carrillo of BBASU. "At this time, there are no allegations that involve any of the Lady Horns' 10 new players. Serrano's coaching status is suspended. Reports to USA Softball and Safe Sport have been completed and will be updated as needed. Keep the Marfa community and the Lady Horns in your thoughts and prayers." According to a criminal complaint, investigators with the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Texas Department of Public Safety executed a federal search warrant on the morning of May 5th for all electronics used by Serrano and recovered a Samsung Galaxy in his possession. Though Serrano refused to provide the passcode, agents managed to search it via a ruse, per the complaint. Agents handed Serrano his phone, at which point he unlocked it, and agents snatched it from his hands before he could lock it again. A search of the phone revealed numerous pieces of child pornography involving prepubescent boys, according to the complaint, including images, videos, and content within the phone's browser. Records show Serrano was formally arrested on May 11th, and the criminal complaint was filed on May 12th in the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Texas. As of press time, Serrano was being held in the Presidio County Jail as a federal inmate. The U.S. Attorney's Office, which is prosecuting the case, has filed a motion to have Serrano detained without bond on the grounds that he poses a flight risk, is a danger to the community, and might attempt to obstruct justice if released. A preliminary detention hearing is scheduled for May 19th. Shane O'Neill, the attorney appointed to represent Serrano, did not return a request for comment. Serrano had recently been arrested twice by the Marfa Police Department for unrelated offenses, public records show. On April 4th, Serrano was arrested for harassment, a Class B misdemeanor, and was released on a $1,000 cash bond. He was arrested again on April 7th for violation of a protective order, a Class A misdemeanor, and was released on a $4,000 surety bond.
Good day, this is Glenn, and I'll be reading today from the Fort Stockton Pioneer of Thursday, May 18th, 2023. Mayoral runoff election June 20th, early voting set for June 8th through 16th by Sean Yorks. It's official. The Fort Stockton City Council canvassed the results of the May 6th general election at a special meeting May 15th, declaring Ruben Falcon the winner for City Council Place 2 and Jerome Chavez the winner for City Council Place 1. Each will serve a three-year term. The council also called for a mayoral runoff election to take place June 20th. Resolution 23-113R was unanimously approved by the council to make the results official. Falcon ran unopposed and garnered 585 votes, while Chavez received 418 votes to 329 for Isai Rojas and 76 for Mike Stallard. Mayor Joe Chris Alexander said 859 ballots were cast. "I'm very glad to have Jerome as a forthcoming council member," Alexander said. "He served on our Home Rule Committee and did a good job for us on that. Falcon is a sitting council member and has previously served as mayor. With all of his years of experience on council, mayor, and council again, he's the only person I know that's gone back and read the minutes from all the past years," Alexander said. "He's a very valuable asset to our city. Glad to have you back." Falcon was thankful to the citizens who voted for him. "Thank you, mayor, and I thank the citizens for placing their trust, putting me back on the council," Falcon said. "I take it very, very serious. I don't want to become stale. To me, as long as you continue to serve, putting the citizens first and not becoming a part of bureaucracy, you're always going to be true to the oath you took, and I take it very seriously." The mayoral election was not decided on May 6th, and the council called for a runoff election June 20th. While Pac Cassius gained the most votes with 370, the 231 votes for James Warnock and 185 by Pam Palillo meant nobody received the required majority, forcing a runoff election between Cassius and Warnock. The election will take place at the Courthouse Annex on Nelson Street, the same location as the May 6th general election, from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. June 20th. Early voting will take place from June 8th through June 16th at the same times and location. The council also approved an election services contract between the city and the Pecos County Clerk. "I'd like to say Liz and her crew do a fabulous job with that," Alexander added. City honors BBORR, Motorcycle Safety and Community Action Agency, by Sean Yorks. The Fort Stockton Mayor and City Council recognize the accomplishments of the Big Bend Open Road Race, as well as Motorcycle Safety Awareness Month and Community Action Month, during its May 8th meeting. Mayor Chris Alexander read three proclamations, starting with Motorcycle Safety Month. "Today's society is finding more citizens involved in motorcycling on the roads of our country," Alexander read in the proclamation. "Motorcyclists are roughly unprotected and therefore more prone to injury or death in a car crash than any other vehicle drivers. Campaigns like Motorcycle Safety Month help inform bikers and drivers with the goal of reducing motorcycle injuries and deaths. It is the responsibility of all who put themselves behind the wheel to become aware of motorcyclists," Alexander read in the proclamation, "regarding them with the same respect as any other vehicle traveling the highways, and it is the responsibility of riders and motorists alike to obey all traffic laws and safety rules." Alexander also read a proclamation recognizing May as Community Action Month. "The Community Council of South Central Texas organized as an action agency in 1965 with the service area of South Central and Southwest Texas counties of Atascosa, Bandera, Bee, Brewster, Crane, Comal, Culberson, Dimmitt, Edwards, Frio, Gillespie, Guadalupe, Hudspeth, Jeff Davis, Carnes, Kerr, Kendall, Kenny, LaSalle, Live Oak, Maverick, Medina, McMullen, Pecos, Presidio, Real, Terrell, Uvalde, Valverde, Wilson, and Zavala. Community action has made essential contributions to individuals and families across this nation by creating economic opportunities and strengthening communities," Alexander read in the proclamation. "Community action builds and promotes economic stability as an essential aspect of enabling and enhancing stronger communities in stable homes and promotes community-wide solutions to challenges throughout our cities, suburbs, and rural areas. Community Action delivers services and supports that create greater opportunities for families and children to succeed, ensures that all sectors of the community have a voice and will be heard. The Council also honored the Big Bend Open Road Race coordinating team with individual awards on the 25th anniversary of the race. Big Bend Open Road Race is an awesome event. 25 years is incredible to have an event going that long, Alexander said. It's one of the longest events we have, short of the water carnival we have going on around here. The race brings in arguably the most visitors of any event in Fort Stockton. It brings in a lot of money that rolls around in our community for time and time again, the mayor added. We sure do appreciate it. Randy Archer, Dustin Archer, Crystal Lopez, George Lura, Joe Anderson, Donna Archer, Bethany Cordova, Larry Cordova, Janet Ford, Sam Ford, Manuel Pacheco, Isaiah Granado, Ray Villarreal, Rick Aragon, Dwayne Bonham each received individual awards. Councilmember Ruben Falcon thanked the BBORR for what they bring to the community. Thank you. As a small business owner who is directly impacted by y'all's efforts, Falcon said, we want to continue this going. County seeks grant for Iran Park improvements by Sean Yorks. Precinct 3 Commissioner Mickey Jack Perry and his crew have been working to improve the Iran Pecos River Park and the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department has taken notice. The Pecos County Commissioner's Court on May 8th voted to apply for a Habitat and Angler Access Program, HAAP, grant to the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, which will help provide more amenities at the park. The improvements will be done in three phases over the next 3 years, and the county has already spent $7,000 on the park over the past 4 years. Friends of the Pecos River became very interested in our little park, and it's been excellent working with those people, Perry said. They spent a lot of time at the river. The most important thing for the park now is new bathrooms. We have quite a few people visit the park, and there are no bathrooms, Perry said. The county's job for the first phase of the planned improvements is running a water line, providing the materials and labor. As far as the grant's concerned, that's our match for this part of the grant, Perry said. That comes out to about $10,000 in material and labor. We're going to be close to $100,000 for this park that we're going to receive from TPWD. The bathrooms will include solar lighting with motion sensors, and there will be an outdoor shower to rinse off. Drinking water fountains will also be included. We're going to start planting trees, Perry said, adding that about 15 trees will initially be planted. It's just kind of a kickoff to what they want to do the next 3 years. Other phases will include removing vegetation that sometimes chokes the river. It's a hand application, Perry said. It doesn't harm the river. It doesn't harm the fish. You can actually go swimming 30 minutes after you do the application. The fishery in San Angelo is interested in stocking catfish, bass, and trout in the river, Perry said. We're trying to move it forward, he added. There are several things that we want to do going forward, like trails and dirt bike trails, things of that nature, trails along the river. This is the beginning. We're definitely serious about making something happen out there. Glitzy's Brew is Business Spotlight. Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce Business Spotlight for May 2023 is on Glitzy's Brew, 1101 West Dickinson Boulevard. Glitzy's Brew Coffee Shop has been a Chamber of Commerce member since 2021. Serving up a variety of coffee and teas, they also offer pastries and can be rented for meetings, parties, events, and family gatherings. They're expanding and will soon have beer and wine available as well. Representatives of the Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce, Chamber Ambassadors, and Chamber Board of Directors presented owners David and Sonia Vick with a Spotlight Certificate on May 9th. Keep Historic Fort Stockton Beautiful Art Contest Winners. Art Contest. Keep Historic Fort Stockton Beautiful honored students who won their art contest. From left, Keep Historic Fort Stockton Beautiful Board Member Mike Stallard. Fort Stockton Intermediate School Teacher Victoria Maldonado. Third place winner Isabella Hernandez. First place winner Hector Jimenez. Second place winner Marisol Palacios. Keep Historic Fort Stockton Beautiful Board Members Ember Renteria and Dulcia Warren. Not pictured are Board Member Debbie Montez, City Secretary Marina Cantu, and Administrative Assistant Sheila Leonard. The annual art contest promotes keeping Historic Fort Stockton beautiful, educating youth on the importance of keeping our community beautiful and free from trash. Senior Citizen Center to hold Memorial Day Cookout. The Pecos County Senior Citizen Center will host its annual Memorial Day Cookout lunch on Friday, May 19th at noon at the Senior Center located at 1010 West 14th Street in Fort Stockton. Hamburgers, hot dogs, and drinks will be provided, but all attendees are asked to please bring a side dish or dessert of their own making. The Senior Citizen Center is open to all Pecos County residents who are 50 and older, with dues only $5 per year. New members are welcome to sign up at the Memorial Day Cookout. Senior Center Board Member Oscar Gonzalez will be manning the grill, cooking up the fresh burgers and hot dogs. Regular activities at the Senior Center include skip bowl games, potluck luncheons, 4th of July hot dog suppers, sing-alongs, and other events throughout the year. It's a great way to get out of the house, meet new people, and have a cool place to relax during the coming summer months. For younger folks, it's a safe place for your parents or grandparents that will keep them active during the daylight hours. For more information on the Memorial Day cookout, contact Maria Gilbert at 432-336-2302. Walker gives back to community with donation to FSCT by Sean Yorks. Stephen Walker wants to give back to the community who has given him so much. Walker, owner of Chunkart Studio in Fort Stockton, was awarded a grant for $500 last year by Fort Stockton Slam, support for local arts music, which he used to purchase supplies for the art he creates. Walker chose to take a percentage of his art sales and give it back to another local arts organization, the Fort Stockton Community Theater. His art is on display at the Fort Stockton Community Theater building on Nelson Street. Walker presented a check for $1,240 to the FSCT at its May 9th board meeting. The focus for me being here today is I am wanting to give back, Walker told the board, adding that Alice Dirksen of the FSCT is the one who made him aware of the SLAM organization. Three people filled out the application for the grant last year, and I was the only one who was awarded anything. Walker asked if he could earmark the money for a specific fund, and gallery lighting was chosen because we noticed how much better the work looked when they were lit, adding that lighting would benefit future art showings at the theater. Now the SLAM organization can use my experience as an example to other people to show that investing in local art and local artists does pay, Walker said. Cardley Terrier at the Dog Show by guest columnist Slam Randalls. I took Duckworth to the dog show up in the city last weekend, Dud said. The other members of the Mule Barn Truck Stop's World Dilemma Think Tank and Philosophy Counter just looked at him. Doc put it gently. Dud, was this so he could get some inspiration on looking good? Duckworth was a medium-sized dog that found Dud while Dud was walking and thinking about the novels he's writing. No one answered the ad he put in the Valley Weekly Miracle, so he was henceforth known as Duckworth. For some reason, Dud seemed to want to keep to himself. To be honest, Duckworth looked like he fell out of the ugly tree and hit every branch on the way down. No, I was going to enter him in the dog show, Dud said. Took him right up to the registration table and tried to get him in a class. The lady there looked at old Duck and asked to see his papers. Dud grinned. I told her they were back home on the floor of the laundry room. She didn't think it was funny. Now, Duckworth had been introduced to the other dogs in the group at the sale barn, as is the custom, and Dud's pals had been hesitant to ask much about him. Duckworth looked like something put together by a committee with a sense of humor. Oh, he was a dog, no doubt about that, but what kind of dog was he? It made for interesting coffee speculation, that's for sure. You know, Dud said, Anita was against me getting any kind of dog until Duckworth came along. When I explained to her that Duckworth was a bird dog, a duck dog, actually, and that he had helped me bring more birds home, she finally gave in. He's a bird dog? Steve said. What kind? Now that's what that dog show lady asked me, you know. I had to explain to her about Canardly Terriers because she wasn't familiar with them. Canardly Terriers, you betcha, Dud said, grinning. Well, I'll bet you can hardly tell what kind of terrier he is. For the best friend a human being is able to have, please consider adopting a dog or a cat from your local shelter. Do Something, your guide to local places to go and things to do. May 19th, the Pecos County Senior Citizen Center will host its annual Memorial Day cookout lunch on Friday, May 19th at noon at the Senior Center located at 1010 West 14th Street in Fort Stockton. Hamburgers, hot dogs, and drinks will be provided, but all attendees are asked to please bring a side dish or a dessert of their own making. For more information on the Memorial Day cookout, contact Maria Gilbert at 432-336-2302. May 23rd to the 25th. Track camp for grades 2 to 9 from 10 to 11:30 a.m. at the Fort Stockton High School track complex. Call 432-336-4112 for more information. May 23rd to the 25th, girls basketball camp for grades 5 to 9 from 1 to 4 p.m. at Fort Stockton High School. Call 432-336-4112 for more information. May 25th, the Summer Off the Patio concert series at Annie Riggs Museum begins on Thursday, May 25th, with Donovan Keith playing from 7 to 8 p.m. The event is free to the public and presented by the Fort Stockton Historical Society. June 1st, Fort Stockton Public Library's summer reading program kicks off with Bronson Chadwick, Artist of the Impossible, 6 p.m. at the library, 500 North Water Street. Sign-ups for the summer reading program are underway now. June 21st through July 26th, the Imperial Public Library will again present a summer reading program. All age groups are encouraged to read and enjoy the many benefits of the library over the summer. The theme for this year is All Together Now, starting June 21st, 2023, and ending July 26, 2023, every Wednesday from 10 a.m. to noon. For more info, call 432-536-2236. June 24th, Roaming Coyote Photography Workshop, 5 to 7 p.m. at the Chamber of Commerce Conference Room, 1000 Railroad Avenue. Learn more about your camera, lighting, and build confidence. Registration includes a barbecue dinner, t-shirt, and workbook. July 17th through the 20th, the Sol Ross State Women's Basketball Coaching Staff will be playing host to a series of basketball camps at the Pete P. Gallego Center this summer. A day camp for ages 7 to 17 takes place July 17th through the 20th. The camp will run from 8:30 a.m. to noon each day. Snacks and bottled water will be provided daily. Contact head coach E.J. Lee Smith, 318-372-5203, or graduate assistant Vanya Hampton at 857-504-4647. July 22nd to the 23rd, an elite basketball camp for players in grades 9 to 12 will take place July 22nd and 23rd at Sol Ross State University in Alpine. Day 1 will run from 2 to 6 p.m., while day 2 will be from 8:30 a.m. to noon. Head women's basketball coach E.J. Lee Smith and staff will be running the camp. Smith enters her second season at Sol Ross State. Contact head coach E.J. Lee Smith at 318-372-5203 or graduate assistant Venya Hampton at 857-504-4647. Sports section. Fort Stockton relay team wins state title. Staff report. The Fort Stockton 1600-meter relay team is the fastest 4A team in the land. The Panthers team of Arian Hernandez, Marco Garcia, Jesus Hernandez, Zane Hodges won the event in a time of 3 minutes and 17.19 seconds, outpacing Aubrey by 0.4 of a second. During the race, Arian Hernandez started out in lane 4 and was in a dead heat with runners from Dumas and Salina after the first 400 meters. Garcia took over the second leg and led the entire leg with Salina on his tail, but the Bobcats overtook Jesus Hernandez in the first 100 meters of the third leg. Zane Hodges took over on the final leg with Salina in the lead and Aubrey making a strong move in third place. Hodges grabbed the lead from the start and maintained it for the entire 400 meters to capture the state championship as Salina faded to fourth and Aubrey took second. The win, combined with a second-place finish by Hodges in the 300-meter hurdles and third-place finish in the 110-meter hurdles, earned Fort Stockton a third-place tie overall in the team standings and was the highest-placed team out of Region 1. Fort Stockton broke school records in all three events. These young men have competed at a high level all year long, said Coach Vic Ivey. Their hard work during the season paid off for them. Hodges, the regional champion in both 110 and 300 hurdles, placed third in the 110-meter hurdles in 14.05 seconds, 15 hundredths of a second behind second place Matthew Teske of Kilgore. Jarvis Anderson of Taylor was a state champion with a time of 13.64 seconds. Hodges was second in the 300-meter hurdles with a time of 37.4 seconds, about 1.5 seconds behind state champion Anderson. Angel Munoz of El Paso Riverside was about a half second behind Hodges for third place. Zane and Jesus completed a great four-year track career for the Panthers, Ivy added. The team and coaches would like to thank all those who supported us during this season, for without it, we would not have been able to accomplish what we have done this season. Glitzy's Brew is Business Spotlight. Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce Business Spotlight for May 2023 is on Glitzy's Brew, 1101 West Dickinson Boulevard. Glitzy's Brew Coffee Shop has been a Chamber of Commerce member since 2021. Serving up a variety of coffee and teas, they also offer pastries and can be rented for meetings, parties, events, and family gatherings. They're expanding and will soon have beer and wine available as well. Representatives of the Fort Stockton Chamber of Commerce, Chamber Ambassadors, and Chamber Board of Directors presented owners David and Sonia Vick with a spotlight certificate on May 9th. Fort Stockton ISD will once again participate in the Seamless Summer Option, SSO, program. SSO provides nutritious meals to our youth during the time when our schools are normally closed. It is a great way to give parents a break from having to fix every meal for their kids. Best of all, the meals are free for children and teens ages 18 and younger. Beginning June 5th, through June 30th, 2023. Serving sites, middle school and Alamo Elementary. Serving times, breakfast 7:30 to 8, lunch 11:45 to 12:30, and First Baptist Church, June 5th through 9th only, breakfast 7:30 to 8, lunch 11:45 to 12:30.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, May 11th. Liquor by the Drink Passes. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A local option election to allow for sale of alcoholic beverages, including mixed beverages, throughout Monahans, passed Saturday, May 6th, according to unofficial numbers from the city of Monahans. Numbers provided late Saturday, May 6th, by the city reflect voters approved the measure with 131 votes. Results show 68 were against the item. The special election asked voters to answer for or against the question to legalize the legal sale of all alcoholic beverages, including mixed beverages. Once the results are certified during the May 16th City Council meeting, it is expected to allow for all alcoholic beverage sales, including mixed beverages, to be sold inside restaurants and hotels with proper license through the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, City Secretary Tanya Todd said. Meaning, restaurants and hotels inside city limits will be able to sell mixed drinks without requiring a private membership. Other items on the ballot during the special election were and to answer for or against 7 amendments to the city charter, which updated old, outdated language which no longer applied. All amendments passed unanimously. Proposition A, lengthen the amount of time a person is permitted to provide the city with notice of certain damage or injury for which they believe the city may be liable from 30 days to 90 days, passed with 161 for and 34 against. Proposition B, insert reference to new state statutes limiting the authority of a city to annex new territory into the city boundaries and governing the procedures necessary to achieve annexation, passed with 158 for and 33 against. Proposition C, amended to set the time and method of electing the mayor and members of the city council, place regular elections on the May uniform election date, set the time for any special election at the nearest possible date following a vacancy at the next practicable date for which an election can be held, and revise language throughout these sections to accommodate related administrative eligibility, filing, and ballot preparation criteria required by state election law, passed with 171 for and 18 against. Proposition D, amended to strike 2 provisions of the charter requiring that dates placed on certain documents submitted to or published by the city be written and dated reference to 19, the 20th century, passed with 162 for and 22 against. Proposition E, amended relating to tax assessment, levies, and procedures that are now preempted by state law, and revising the remaining 2 sections to reflect the replacement of those outdated procedures by the current system managed in relevant part by the tax assessor collector, appraisal district, and appraisal review board, passed with 157 in favor and 27 against. Proposition F will ask the city charter be amended to remove an outdated requirement that city audit reports be published in the newspaper, as the reports are now published on the city's public internet website, passed with 136 in favor and 53 against. Proposition G, amended to remove language authorizing collection of amounts owed by the city to a person through execution of city property or garnishment of city funds, passed with 132 in favor and 53 against. In all, 200 voters cast their votes in the city special election, 113 early voted, and 87 voted on election day. School addresses shooting threat, second since March. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. The Monahans-Wickett Pyote School District issued a statement to address another threat of a school shooting circulating on the online social media platform Snapchat. Superintendent of Schools Chad Smith said, quote, "The school became aware of the shooting threat at Walker Junior High around 9:30 a.m. Wednesday morning, and we are working with law enforcement, but have yet to establish the validity of the shooting threat," end quote. The district also sent a message out to parents via the Remind app saying, quote, "There has been a rumored threat that was discovered on Snapchat. The rumor is that there will be a shooting at Walker Junior High at 3 p.m. MWPISD is aware of this, and we are looking into it and have police presence at the campus. the students and staff are safe. We will continue to update as we get information. The students and staff are safe and behind secure doors as they are every day. We have MWP Chief Orlando Orona and Officer Luna at the campus, as well as other members of local law enforcement agencies throughout the day, and will update as more information becomes available, Smith added. Around 10:30 a.m., the district sent an updated message to parents stating, quote, "Update on the threat towards WJH. The individual who had the message on their Snapchat is being questioned by the Sheriff's Department. We will keep you updated as we get information from law enforcement," end quote. In early March, a 12-year-old boy was charged after he allegedly sent a threat via Facebook to conduct a shooting at Parkway Elementary. Around 11:30 a.m., the district sent an additional message saying, "Update on threat. It has been determined by law enforcement that the threat was to a neighboring school district, not Walker Junior High. Law enforcement is currently questioning the individuals involved and are handling everything on their end. Thank you for your patience and understanding during this time," end quote. The Monahans News will update this story as more information becomes available. Ennis resigns as county treasurer, appointed to auditor. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The Ward County Commissioners approved the appointment of current County Treasurer Carly Ennis to become the county auditor. Ennis, who was appointed to the 2-year term by District Judge Mike Swanson, will fill the position of Ellen Fryer, who is retiring after 26 years of service to Ward County. Fryer's retirement will officially begin on October 1st. In a related agenda item, the commissioners voted to accept Ennis' official letter of resignation, resigning from the county treasurer's position by July 31st. She will be assistant auditor through August and September while being trained by Fryer. Quote, "Myself and the court would like to thank Ellen for all her years of service to this county and wish her the best in her retirement," Ward County Judge Greg Holly said. In other business, commissioners approved a change order to Exerplay for grading and leveling the splash pad area at the event center part to promote proper drainage of the area. Also on the agenda was approving the minor adjustment for the 16-inch pipeline easement on county property near Barstow. Payment of the county bills was approved by the commissioners, as well as approving the officer's report, hospital budget amendments, and the previous meeting minutes. Present for the meeting were Precinct 2 Commissioner Larry Hanna, Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols, Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms, and Judge Greg Holly. Precinct 1 Commissioner Tina Sanchez was not present for the meeting. The next Ward County Commissioners meeting will be on Monday, the 22nd, at 9:30 a.m. at the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioners' meeting. Pullen, being held on $115,000 bond on aggravated sex robbery charges. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A Hyde man was indicted on charges of aggravated robbery and aggravated sexual assault of a child involving a victim under the age of 14. Zachary James Pullen, age 21, was arrested and booked into the Ward County Jail on May 5th on 2 Ward County warrants for aggravated sexual assault of a child and aggravated robbery, both first-degree felonies. According to indictments handed down by the 143rd Ward County Grand Jury on November 12th and December 9th, 2022, Pullen did knowingly have sexual intercourse with a child under the age of 14 and while committing theft of property, Poland did knowingly threaten Evangelina Primera with bodily injury or death by exhibiting a handgun or BB gun. There are two elements that make a sexual assault or robbery aggravated, the victim being under the age of 14, and the use of threats, force, weapons, or drugs. The offenses can be punishable by imprisonment in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice for any term of 5 to 99 years or life, and or a fine not to exceed $10,000. Bond was set at $115,000 for both charges, and Poland remains in custody at the Ward County Jail in lieu of posting the bond. Therapy Dogs Visit Hospital for Mental Health Day. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. Three dogs and their owners from Alliance Therapy Dogs, or ATD, spent time at Ward Memorial Hospital and Sandhills Clinic visiting with employees and patients on Monday afternoon. ATD is a national organization dedicated to helping people get through difficult times in their lives through contact with animals, especially dogs. The dogs are one of several teams of dogs located in the Permian Basin that visit hospitals, nursing homes, and other facilities to interact with the patients. The dogs bring comfort and joy to those who are ill or existing under poor conditions, such as those who have been affected by a natural disaster. The event was approved by Ward Memorial Hospital Administrator and CEO Leticia Rodriguez for Mental Health Monday and arranged by WMH Human Resource Director and Administrative Assistant J.C. Carter. ATD team members David Shaw and RN at Midland Memorial Hospital had Monroe with him. Monroe is a 6-year-old 70-pound basset hound who loves people. Stephanie Shaw, David's wife, who is a professional trainer, had her 3-year-old long-haired chihuahua, Martini, with her for the visit, and Donna Merrill was there with her 13-year-old standard poodle, Diva. Donna has personal experience with the type of therapy these dogs are capable of providing. Quote, "I lost my leg about a year ago, and Diva was a very important part of my healing therapy. Now we try to comfort others as they face health challenges. I even found someone to make Diva's collar out of the same fabric that covers my prosthetic leg, so now we match," Merrill said. Therapy dogs have attended obedience training and are generally very calm and well-behaved. They are not service animals. They have been trained and screened for their ability to interact with humans and other animals. The primary purpose of a therapy animal is to provide affection and comfort to people in hospitals, retirement homes, nursing homes, schools, hospices, disaster areas, and to people with learning difficulties. Therapy animals are privately owned and tend to visit facilities on a regular basis. A therapy animal is only half of the equation. A responsible caring handler is an important member of the therapy animal team. At the end of a visit, therapy animals go home with their owners. Most commonly, therapy animals are dogs that have shown they like people and have the temperament to work with them. Stephanie Shaw is owner of Shawshack Canine, a training and boarding facility in Midland. She trains service and therapy dogs, trains puppies, is an AKC-CGC, American Kennel Club Canine Good Citizen Evaluator, and offers boarding services. Donna Merrill is a retired elementary teacher. She taught at Midland's Fennin Elementary School. Quote, "The dogs provide a very important aspect of healing. The bond between humans and dogs has been around for a very long time," David said. "As a nurse, I have seen what these dogs are capable of doing for humans. Monroe has been trained to put his feet up on my knee when I kneel down. This makes him accessible to patients in wheelchairs." Just being able to pet their head or rub their ears can make a person feel comforted, and the patients can feel the love and caring coming from that special dog, said Merrill. All the dog teams are volunteers who give their time to help others in need. Quote, hopefully, we will be able to coordinate another visit in the future. We just have to align the hospital schedule and the therapy team volunteers to set another patient pet and heal therapy session. We are really looking forward to having them visit again, Carter said. The Alliance Therapy Dogs of the Permian Basin have a Facebook page, and Stephanie Shaw can be contacted at www.shaw-shackk9.com or call or text 432-363-4404 for information about booking the dogs for a visit.